This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. Well, topics of criminal justice are certainly in the news every day. We've had the recent passing of Proposition 21 here in California. We have our local issues going on with the Public Defender's Office. We've heard about what's happening in Los Angeles and in New York with Amadou Diallo. I am very, very pleased to have Michael Glockick with us, who is former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission, also former staff director of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee, and also legislative director for United States Senator Joe Biden, a practicing attorney and consultant on criminal justice matters. Mr. Glockick, thank you for being with us on the program.
My pleasure.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. Can we at first begin by talking about what the United States Sentencing Commission is, what it does, how it functions?
Oh, sure. What it is something very few people know about, but it's an organization set up by Congress. It consists of seven individuals appointed by the president who set sentencing policy for anyone and everyone convicted in the federal courts in the United States. It's the commission that put in place the federal sentencing guidelines that everybody is now subject to when they go before a federal judge for sentencing.
Certainly, some of those guidelines have, in my opinion, proved to be pretty draconian, especially when we're talking about drug law.
Well, drug penalties in this country are, at least at the federal level and in many of the states, have gotten to the point where they are draconian. Combination of the federal sentencing guidelines and a number of mandatory minimum sentences passed by Congress have led to some fairly substantial penalties in terms of years for people who are involved in drug trafficking. And when you superimpose over all of that the conspiracy laws that exist in the United States, it's very easy for a number of people to go to jail for long periods of time who are involved in trafficking in drugs.
We're very often talking about people who, well, maybe very often is unfair, I don't know, but certainly there are times when we're talking about people who may only be the girlfriend or wife of the actual drug trafficker or the alleged drug trafficker, but because they were connected to this person, they find themselves in positions where they're doing very lengthy prison sentences, correct?
Oh, sure. There are lots of people like that. There are a couple outrageous cases that have gotten a lot of media attention. One is Kemba Smith, a young lady out of Richmond, Virginia, who is just what you described. Another was a woman named Amy Pofal, who's from Arkansas but was sentenced in Southern California to an outrageous sentence, and she was just involved peripherally in something that her husband was doing. But it's even worse than that. I mean, what's happened is because of the tools that are in place for prosecutors and because of the length of some of these sentences that are involved in narcotics trafficking, what we do is we put the lowest common denominator in jail. So most of the people who are going to jail are street-level traffickers. They're not, they're not nice people. They are involved in drug trafficking, but they don't deserve the kind of sentences they're getting, and they're not the kinds of people that the federal government would have you believe that they want to focus these laws are on, which are the kingpins and the high-level traffickers. What we're doing is putting low-level traffickers, friends, mules, however you want to call them, girlfriends, wives, people who are peripherally involved in jail for long periods of time. And the worst, what's even worse than that is many times because of the way the laws are designed and the sentencing practices of the United States, those people who are at the highest levels or the highest levels that we can, that we've arrested, are able to cooperate with the government and secure a much lower sentence or less time to be served than the people who are low-level in the organization who are going to go to jail for long, long periods of time. And when I say long periods of time, we're talking 20, 30, 40 life sentences.
We're talking with Michael Glonkick, former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission, also former staff director of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee, and former legislative director for United States Senator Joe Biden. Also, Mike Glonkick teaches as an adjunct professor at George Washington University Law School. Mr. Glonkick, let me ask you, I mean, from my perspective, you have spent time at what I would consider to be some of the very top levels of justice, criminal justice policy in the United States. It seems to me, from just what I know and what I see, what I read, what I see on television, it seems that things are going horribly wrong, that we're becoming a society where we're increasingly putting more and more and more people behind bars and with more and more laws, stiffer and stiffer sentences every day.
Yeah.
Talk, if you will, about your view of all of this.
Well, my view is that we don't need a prison industrial complex in this country. We have now more than 2 million people incarcerated around the United States, and that doesn't even get into the numbers that are involved in the criminal justice system in other ways. But we don't need, and we can't afford to have this many people in jail. Unfortunately, what's happened is we have a Congress that's intent upon passing tougher and tougher legislation and trying to prove to everybody how tough they are in crime, and that's an influence that's meeting with an economy that's doing the best of any economy in the history of mankind. Unfortunately, faced with those circumstances, the government can demonstrate that crime, if you will, has gone down. Well, that shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. The crime rates always go down when the economy's good. They go back up when the economy's bad. But the crime rate's been pretty static in this country. What's changed is we put people in jail now. And we put them, if it were up to many people in Congress, we'd put them in jail for everything they can think of. It used to be that, and it should be, that incarceration would be the last resort that we would go to before we sent someone to jail. Now it's the first and, in many cases, the only option. That's kind of backwards. That's got criminal justice really flipped on its head, and it's sad. It's going to take some time to change, but we are starting to see the debate form now, and some changes are going to be taking place, I would hope. At least there's some efforts now to deal with older prisoners, the fact that it costs too much to keep them in jail. And the one thing we know is that as people get older, they're not that much of a threat to society. But what's interesting about the movement to get older people out of jail is it's led by people like Ed Meese, who is as tough a law and order type as you could ever find. But he's now come to the understanding that these policies don't make a lot of sense, and that you have to look at costs, and you have to look at what you're doing to people's lives. And he's leading now the fight to help older people get out of jail. That's, if nothing else, very interesting.
Right. We're talking with Michael Glonkick, former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission. Mr. Glonkick used the term prison industrial complex, and certainly we hear that term being used more and more. When you use that term, prison industrial complex, what are you trying to describe, and how did we arrive at having one in this country?
Well, I'm not exactly sure how I could define it, but it's outrageous, I think, that we can't build prisons fast enough. We can't bring them online fast enough to deal with the number of inmates that we're generating because of the laws that have been passed over the last 10 to 15 years. That, if nothing else, is sad, but it's worse when you think about the fact that we have moved in some states in the direction of privatizing prisons and letting a profit motive enter into incarcerating people for periods of time. You know, it's like that movie Field of Dreams. If you build them, somebody's got to fill them up.
Right.
And when we have this, when we continually try to increase capacity, you know, there's always room at the end. That's not really what we ought to be doing, I don't think. And we ought to be trying to find ways to get people out of jail and not put them in jail in the first place. Not everybody needs to go to jail.
It seems to me that, I mean, when we look at the policies being enacted where more and more people are being sent, and not just to jail, quote-unquote, not just your average county jail, but to state and federal prison, which cannot help but change a person in some pretty significant ways, that at the same time we're putting these people, most of them who will get out someday, into prison, we're making these prisons more and more hellish, and then releasing these people back out into our community. I mean, it seems absolutely crazy. I mean, what are people thinking of?
I guess the simple answer is they're not thinking. They don't consider what the consequences are, and we haven't had to face the consequences yet because of the number of years that are involved for many of these people. But fact of the matter is, most of the people who are arrested, convicted, and incarcerated for activity in the drug trade that's led to this tremendous increase in inmates are young people. And, you know, we all make mistakes, but young people have, in some instances, bad judgment. They make bad choices. They make mistakes. And regardless of how you feel about them, you may want to punish them, but, you know, a lifetime behind bars is overkill, especially for street-level dealers. I mean, why are we willing to spend? Who makes a policy decision that says we're willing to spend 100,000, estimates of 100,000 to $1 million to keep somebody behind bars for a street-level drug transaction that couldn't have resulted in a profit of more than a few hundred dollars? I mean, that's nonsensical. That is absolutely as backwards as you can possibly get. You know, and I know people will say, well, they're criminals. Well, sure, they're criminals, but they don't need to spend the rest of their life behind bars. I mean, you know, these aren't all bad people.
This is Full Logic Reverse. We'll be back in just a few moments. We're talking with Michael Galogic, former Vice Chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission, also former Staff Director of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. Mr. Galogic, let me ask you, because I know we've done programs here in the past, for example, on capital punishment. And some of the guests we've had on, I'm thinking in particular of a gentleman from Washington, Richard Dieter, who... They published a booklet called Killing for Votes, and what it was this sort of expose, if you will, or at least a perception that there's this loop that goes on. I have to be tough on crime in order to get elected, in order to keep monies coming in, and even if I can't really be okay with what I'm doing, if I want to stay in whatever position I'm in, I have to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we have here going on with our criminal justice system?
At least that's what I see in Washington, and I'm sure people see that in the states. Everybody's afraid that, you know, if they vote for anything that can be perceived as soft on criminals or crime, whoever their opponent is in the next election is going to use that against them and is going to win. Well, I don't know. I think it's time somebody had to, you know, the courage to stand up and say the emperor has no clothes. I think it's time for somebody to have the courage to stand up and test that thesis, because it's kind of crazy to think that everybody is just wanting to send everybody else to jail who commits any kind of an infraction. That's not the case. When I talk to people around the country, they don't want everybody to go to jail for everything, and some of them are appalled when you tell them how long people get in some of these cases and how long they spent behind bars. We've had jurors state to people that they would never have convicted the defendant if they'd known how long they were going to have to serve in jail. Unfortunately, they don't get to know that before the conclusion of any trial. these sentencing policies have just plain gotten out of hand. We don't need to put everybody in jail for everything that we can possibly think of. And we don't have to think that the American public is quite that cavalier or quite that uninvolved. I think, quite frankly, that the American public has been convinced and has been convinced for some time that the federal government and governments in particular can't do a whole lot about crime. You know, it's been part of society since Adam and Eve, and it's always going to be part of society. We do our best to control it and to deal with it. But for politicians to tell the public that they're going to cure the crime problem by putting people in jail, by punishing their way out of it, is ludicrous. And nobody believes.
Let me go ahead and ask you this question.
Sure.
I'm going to go on the basis that, you know, you seem to hold some pretty hard views about this. I'm going to go on the basis this hasn't been some recent epiphany on your part. I don't know. Maybe it has. What are the folks... When you were up on the hill, I mean, were you saying these things to them? What were they saying?
Oh, I say it to them all the time. And, you know, it's kind of frustrating in a way because many of the people in Congress, when you sit down and talk with them on a one-to-one basis or with a group, will tell you, look, we know you're right. We know these things are out of hand. But this just is, you can't ask us to make this vote. Politically, we can't do it. The public opinion is all on the other side of this issue, and there's just no way we're going to make this vote. So don't come up here and ask us to. Don't come up here and ask us to change penalties or to help these people. And that's, you know, that's a fact of life. That's what you have to deal with.
Even though they know that
sure, they know.
What they're doing is absolutely
correct. But one thing I've learned, I've been around politics all my life, and it's, you know, it's been 35, almost 40 years. One thing I've learned is you can't ask or expect a politician to do something that he or she perceives to be against his or her own self-interest. I learned that lesson a long time ago. I keep asking them, but I know what the answer is going to be.
We're talking with Mike Glockick, former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission. Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, it seems like the law that is so unjust and... But because it's on the books, it's used every day, should be on trial. And that is what's wrong with our society, is we're not responsible enough to recognize the criminality of the law and the complacency of the whole structure that put that in place, and that's the crime. And when we, not only is it costing us a horrendous amount of money year after year, greater and greater amounts are being spent, but you're destroying families, you're criminalizing minor offenders, and institutionalizing in a greater way. And society can be seen to be shameful if it does that.
Well, let's let Mr. Glockick talk to
Thank
that.
You.
I think I basically, I don't agree that the law is a crime, but, I mean, the law is a law, and we, at least I swore an oath to uphold the law, and as do members of Congress. Yeah, you may not agree with it, and in many instances, I don't agree with it. But everything else you said, I believe is true. I think what we're doing to families, what we're doing to people, what we do to the individuals involved here is borderline outrageous because it's so over the line. It's so over the top. I mean, you know, sending people to jail for 30 or 40 years without much thought going into that process is really sad. You know, people who talk about those kinds of numbers of years for penalties have either never been to jail, in a jail, or they've never been I don't mean as an inmate. They've never thought about what that means. You know, 5 years in jail is a heck of a long time, and you know, nobody wants to go to jail. We don't have anybody knocking on the door saying, "Can we come in here?" They're not nice places.
Well, yeah,
they don't
that's for
do
sure.
good things for people.
Let me ask you. I mean, it seems to me, and I mean, I think this is pretty much of a given, that the drug war has been the fuel for all of this, Do we need to end the drug war just flat out, say, you know what, this is stupid, forget it?
The tremendous numbers of people in jail, there's no question that that's a direct result of the so-called war on drugs. But we don't need to. I don't know how you end the war. I mean, it's become a catchphrase. But I want to tell you something. If this really was a war, we lost it a long time ago. There isn't anybody I know who would sensibly argue that we have less problem with narcotics today than we did when we put all these draconian sentencing policies in place. It's a far worse problem for society, and we've got 2 million people in jail. So what did we do? We didn't do anything. We didn't influence the problem. We didn't affect the drug problem. That's still very much a part of our everyday lives, and I don't know what the answer to it is, but I know that the answer is not to try to punish our way out of the problem and incarcerate more and more and more people. It's not working. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, if you will, to figure out that it's not working. And someday, when the economy turns around, and I hope that is a long time in the future, but someday people are going to focus upon the cost here and the tremendous numbers of dollars it is costing society in general to incarcerate 2 million people for lengthy periods of time.
We're talking with Michael Galankic. Carla, you're live on the air.
Hey, Mike, another great show.
Thank you.
My question is kind of just, I think there's a bigger issue here, which is we're talking about how the increase of drug offenders in prison, but the only reason there's room for them is that they have these very short periods of time for rapists and murderers and things like that. Letting these people back out in society kind of allows people to continue to ask for more police services because we have more poster boys we can put on the news and complain about. I'd like to hear what the guest has to say about that.
Go ahead.
Well, I have to answer that question in two ways, I guess. At the federal level, there aren't a lot of murderers and rapists in federal facilities because that's just not a crime that occurs very often at the federal level. That's more a local or state event, and is prosecuted in localities unless it's a military reservation or an Indian reservation or something like that. But the tenor of your comments is absolutely correct. Up until very recently, the average time served for murder in this country, time served in jail, was less than 10 years. For rape, it was significantly less than that. And to think that a street-level dealer in a drug conspiracy is more harmful to society than someone who kills or rapes is backwards, at the very least. And I know all the arguments about narcotics being bad, and this is a real problem for society, but we haven't changed it by locking up street-level dealers and locking them up for 20 or 30 or 40 years at a time. It's just a waste of resources, time, effort, everything you can think of.
Caller, you're live on the air. Caller, you're live on the air.
Hello. Oh, hey, live on the air.
Yes.
Hey, Mike Thornton.
Yes.
Good show.
Thank you.
Hey, listen, here's my point with that. Doesn't it come down to that drug offenses are pretty much more easily convicted than a lot of these other ones that people don't really like to hear about and raise the ugly head of rape and murder? So isn't that kind of one of the reasons they jump on that bandwagon?
Yes and no. Once again, there aren't a lot of rapes or murders at the federal level. So when you federalize drug crimes, you put a lot more people in jail. But it's not hard to convict people. But there are too many people who go to trial. Most of them plead guilty.
Sure, but they choose not to make those a federal case because, I mean, essentially that's a lot of time and effort involved in that, right, when you can just put the street dealer away for nothing, a couple of bags or whatever.
Well, we can't. There is no federal jurisdiction over murder or rape. Those are local crimes. And drugs,
how is it the FBI gets involved in something like that, then?
I'm sorry?
How would it be the FBI would get involved in something like that? They choose to make that federal, don't they?
If it was, in Washington, D.C., which is a federal enclave, or if it was on an Indian reservation, or if it
across
was
the state lines,
it has to have some federal nexus.
Which really, I mean, to me, that's an escape clause. I mean, yeah, that's what they say, but they choose whether or not they want to make that a federal deal. I mean, essentially, it's because you can keep these prisons filled, and it's all part of this big, it's a big cog in the wheel of revenues and stuff. I mean, to watch Wayne Brown operate, you have, 300 people working there, essentially not doing much, but they're all generating that $14, $15 an hour, and it trickles all the way down the hill.
Caller, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Well, certainly there is a lot of money in this, and a lot of people are making money on it. We're talking with Mike Golodkic, former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission. Mr. Golodkic, I know that you have to go out of town and probably getting close to having to leave. What can we do to help start turning this around?
Well, I guess the media is the option of choice, I think. It's time that major media and major print magazines started to focus on some of the people in jail for lengthy periods of time and take a look at their stories and why they're there and shine the light on them and let the American public know what's going on. Because most people, quite frankly, their shirt tail or gut reaction, if you ask them what you ought to do with criminals, well, lock them up, you know, put them away, get them away from me so they won't bother me. That's a normal, everyday reaction. But when you talk to them about what do they really mean by that, they mean punish them appropriately. They do not mean overkill. They do not mean send them to jail for the rest of their lives for something that they think is a minor offense or not a serious offense like a rape or a murder. They think that people should be punished reasonably. We're not doing that. We're sending, you know, it's a game in the legislatures around the country to see how much time and increased penalties they can assess to people for everything they can think of. Well, that's counterproductive in a lot of ways. It's counterproductive on the people. It costs money. It leads to disrespect for the law because bad laws make people lose respect for all laws. And we've got some bad laws on the books. But trying to get that changed, the media is going to have to focus, shine the light of day on it, and start to really generate some debate. It'll take some time because there aren't a lot of people out there saying the kinds of things you've heard me say today. And
unfortunately, that's true. You know. And we need more of people like yourself saying the things that you're saying. We've been speaking with Michael Golodkic, former vice chairman of the United States Sentencing Commission, also former staff director of the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. Mr. Golodkic, thank you for being with us on the program today. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, and hopefully we can do it again on other issues.
I would very much like that. Have a good trip.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, FLR@JPS.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.